Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast. This is Pat Iyer, and today we have with us Kathleen Pagana, who is a nurse. She has earned her PhD. She's a professional speaker and a best-selling author. You may recognize Kathleen as being one of the lead authors of Mosby's Diagnostic and Laboratory Test Reference, which she developed with her husband, and Mosby's Manual of Diagnostic and Laboratory Testing. Kathleen and I met at University of Pennsylvania when I was working on my master's degree, and I graduated in 1979. So Kathleen, I think that we've known each other for a lot of years. If you asked me to do the math, that would be...
I was thinking that. It's been a long time.
And I have watched Kathleen's book. Books become very popular. They are highly relied upon references in the medical world. And she has also become interested in The Nurse's Etiquette Advantage, which is the title of her book that received a 2016 American Journal of Nursing Book of the Year Award. Along the way, Kathleen entered the speaking world and has been a person that I have met through at I have met her and connected with her periodically at the National Speakers Association. She's an engaging speaker. She's presenting national and international keynotes every year. And she focuses in on leadership, life balance, business etiquette, and presentation skills. The focus of today's program is on presentation skills. In the legal nurse consulting world, you may be involved in presenting to an attorney in a number of ways, at a conference, at a lunch and learn, or a small educational gathering at a law firm. You could be presenting in a courtroom, presenting your opinion and persuading the jury to accept and endorse your opinion of a case. So many of the tips that you're going to hear today from Kathleen can be applied in your communication with attorneys. Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Hi, Pat. I'm happy to be here. And I figured almost 40 years is how long we've known each other.
Well, thank you for doing the math. And that's making me feel really old.
Me too. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you. How did you get started in speaking about presentation skills?
Well, I was a college professor for almost 25 years and always loved presentations, was often asked to do them at pinning ceremonies and things like that. Then it got to a point where I was critically injured in a car accident. And after that accident, which included like a fractured pelvis, ribs, vertebrae, pneumothorax, head injury, it took me 3 years to get back to the point where I could work as a nurse. So in that time, I thought, well, one thing I've always liked was speaking. How can I get into the speaking business? So I contacted the national speaking company and interviewed to work for them and learn presentation skills and teach it. So part of that was a lot of fun for me. I learned how to do it right. I became certified as a trainer and learned from the inside out what it takes to be a speaker.
That sounds like great experience.
It was the best. It was absolutely the best.
I had an opportunity in the early 1990s to work for a seminar company who sent me all over the United States and Canada teaching about nursing documentation and nursing quality assurance. And I learned how to walk into a room and connect with the audience and deliver my material and watch their reactions and change the examples and think on my feet. And it sounds like you've had that same type of experience.
That's exactly what it was, exactly that. It was wonderful traveling all over the country, videotaping people, then had to learn how to critique, how to help people improve, and I absolutely loved it. Learned so much myself.
Well, from what you've just said, I know that you've observed how speakers can improve their presentations. I would love for you to share with our audience the common mistakes that people make when they are speaking or presenting in the framework that we've been identifying.
Okay. I've found an article that I liked, and it talked about seven deadly sins of speaking, so I kind of used that as a takeoff point. So I'm going to mention seven different things that you want to avoid as a speaker. Now, I'm going to say when somebody says like ah and that's not deadly, but it's not effective. But these ones that I'm going to mention are deadly. And John Kindle has a quote that he says, if your presentation skills are weak, you probably will appear less competent, even if you are a content expert. And I think that really says a lot, because some people are content experts, but with weak presentation skills, they're not as effective as they could be. So let me mention these seven. I could start with the first one is laziness. And this is a speaker who fails to prepare. And Pat, you probably know people like this that say, I'm a great speaker. I don't have to do anything to prepare. I just get in my car and I get up there and I do it. That is not effective. A good presenter needs a lot of time for preparation, and you need to improve the craft of speaking. For example, there's certain things that you shouldn't do at the beginning of a presentation. And I'm sure you've all heard people say, today I'm going to talk about. It's very boring. It's a bad way to begin. Or they apologize and they may say, I'm sorry, this topic is a little boring. Just bear with me. I actually heard a doctor say that, and I kind of thinking, oh my gosh, shoot me. And then I heard somebody say once, I'm sorry if it seems a little confusing. This presentation was just dumped on me last night, so I didn't have time to prepare. So there are things like that people like set off on the wrong foot. People think that you can just kind of start off bad and like build into it. You need to like dive into the water. You need to start with a bang. You need to grab people's attention with your opening. And one of my favorite speakers from NSA, Pat, you may know him, Doug Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say, just because people's butts are in the seats, it doesn't mean their brains are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You need to grab that attention. So that's one of the main things. That all has to be part of your planning. Like, how are you going to get their attention? I was at on a hospital board, and the president was introducing the infectious disease doctor, and he was going to give an update on the Zika virus. So when the doctor got up there, this is what he said. As Steve said, I'm going to be given an update on the Zika virus. And I thought, oh no. Why couldn't you just start out with something catchy like, today we have 78 documented cases of Zika in Pennsylvania. You see how that's just much more effective?
Mm-hmm.
People know that it's a great way to begin. So that's one of the main things is don't be lazy. Spend a lot of time on how you're going to start, thinking of ideas to catch people's attention.
I can tell you the worst thing that I ever said at the beginning of a seminar when I was working for the seminar company and they sent me to Canada, and I didn't really know a lot about the documentation system in Canada, although I understood the principles of how nurses document. And I started by saying, I don't know a lot about documentation in Canada. And I watched their faces fall. It was horrible. And I thought, oh, Pat, just leave now.
I know. That's the kind of thing. And like all speakers do that. You make some mistakes, but then you realize it and you just never do it again.
Mm-hmm. Please that's continue. Perfect. What's your second one?
Okay, a second one is envy. And this is a false belief that people think great speakers are just born that way, so let's copy them. Like, I like the way she does this, I'm going to do it exactly the same. I'm going to try to do my PowerPoint exactly like hers. I'm going to do everything the way the other person does it. And that is so wrong, because you need to be authentic. You need to be yourself. And what looks very effortless in somebody else, you don't realize that requires a ton of time and effort to get that way. I was speaking in California once, and they told me, you're going to be the closing speaker. The person before you is the best speaker. She's so dynamic. This is her third year in a row. We're getting her back by popular demand, and you're going to follow her. So meanwhile, I'm watching this, and this person is dynamic. She's walking all around the room. She's like going crazy, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she's so different than I am. And then I thought, no, wait, stop. That's her style. That's not me. I'm entirely different. I did my presentation my way, and it was just as good. And you just have to remember, be authentic, be who you are, and not look at somebody else and try to copy them.
That's a great point, because you can really end up being very fragmented and not authentic and not really comfortable in the role that you're performing if it's not your natural style.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
How about the third?
The third one is kind of a silly one. It's, have you ever heard somebody say, if you're nervous, picture the audience in their underwear?
Or naked. Yes.
Or naked. Yes. The worst. That's just downright silly, because the main strategy for a speaker is you need to show respect for the audience. So right away you're not respecting the audience. And you need to be able to try to connect with that audience by eye contact, interacting, not put yourself in a situation where you're better than the audience. So that one is wrong. I mean, you think you're going to decrease your nervousness. That is the wrong way. If you're nervous, what you want to do is bring your content alive. What are some examples that the audience would benefit from? Can you think of current events? One thing I found very helpful, if you just like search online for a topic, like the Zika, search Zika virus, and up pops like latest statistics. I mean, you right away have something that would be interesting to the audience and decrease your nervousness, because you know you're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a silly one, but so forget that and focus on good eye contact and good interaction with the audience.
And I think that advice came out of a book, which I purchased and read many years ago, with a concept that if you're intimidated by an audience, if you envision them without clothes, it will make you feel less intimidated by those individuals. But there are far more effective ways, such as talking to people prior to the program so that you're able to perhaps pull out an example of something that you've discussed with one of the attendees or one of the attorneys in this case before your presentation. And also I've discovered, Kathleen, the rule that if you are right-handed, you tend to look at the right side of the room and ignore the left. So be aware of the need to keep your eye contact moving and looking at individuals in all parts of the room.
That's an excellent point. And the thing with the eye contact, too, even if you have a big room, if you can look towards, like, say, the left side and make eye contact with one person, the people around that person sense the eye contact is for them also.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an idea of, you know, looking around the room. Yeah, thank you. And I have that same book, because I was looking through my books and it gave that example.
Mm-hmm. How about the fourth one?
The fourth one is gluttony. This is the speaker who believes more is always better. For example, have 100 slides, even though you only have 10 minutes, but speed through them. Just get through them. More is better. And that is completely the wrong attitude. What a speaker needs to find out is, what is their core message? What do you want that audience to know when they leave? If somebody says to them, what was that presentation about that Pat gave? They should be able to say exactly what it was about. Once you know the core message, then you get supporting material. Now, sometimes when you're at a presentation, you may run out of time. maybe they started late because they did announcements, or maybe you're following somebody and that person went overtime. So you need to be able to cut your material back right on the spot. And one way to do that is when you're putting your presentation together, have some material that's must know, some should know, some could know. And then some people actually color code it. And if you're running out of time, you eliminate the could know. Do you need to eliminate the should know? So you can cut down on the spot. And the other thing is some people say, well, what if I end early? Well, people are delighted if you end early.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think you need to go to the last minute. It's not effective.
I have heard speakers talk about structuring their content into thirds. And that way, if they are short on time, they can just focus on one-third or two-thirds of their content in a modular format and then leave out the last portion of their presentation, for example.
That's a great idea, unless you have a presentation, what you're saying, the five key ways you know, to do something.
Well, in the interest of time, we'll only talk about three. And another thing that you said made me think about what I have often heard is that, and I've practiced myself, is instead of ending on a high, a strong point, and then saying, are there any questions, which then diffuses the energy, you ask for questions before you wrap up your program so that when you're finished, you're making your emphatic point and the energy is high in the room as opposed to being diluted by the questions.
That's exactly right. I was going to mention that too. That is key, because sometimes people will raise their hand and their question is, where do we get our parking tickets validated?
Mm-hmm.
If you end there, that's what they go out. So now some people will have like a temporary, well, they'll have an ending, and then they'll say, now who has the first question? And this is a good way to get questions, not say, does anybody have any questions? It almost sounds like, was anybody not paying attention? And now you have a question. Whereas it's much more open to say, who has the first question?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get some questions. Or if still nobody says something, here's something that I've learned, is that you say, a question I'm often asked is,
mm-hmm.
And then you say your question. Then you kind of get the questions going. Then when you wrap that up and say, now, so as we wrap up, as you walk out of this room, if there's only one thing you remember, you know, mm-hmm. then you do your dynamic close.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for mentioning it. That is a key point.
Tell us about the fifth deadly sin.
The fifth one is greed. This is the speaker who wants more time than he or she has.
Oh, yes.
And this is where you violate the contract with your audience. If you're supposed to be speaking like 10 to 11, people are ready to leave at 11. They don't want to hear you say, which I heard a speaker say once when I was following her. She said, I'm out of time, but I have a great story I want to tell you. And I'm thinking, no, you should not tell that story. I'm next. So in order to be polite and nice to the organizer, I ended my presentation right on time. So I cut my presentation to accommodate her, so they were back on track. Which you shouldn't do. That violates the contract with your audience. It's just like, you know, we were talking about questions. If somebody asks a question at the end and you give a 10-minute answer, I mean, nobody wants to ask another question.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing about the questions, you need to keep them short so people will feel free to ask one. And once you're at the end of the program, you just say, my time is up right now. I'm willing to stay here if anybody has any questions, but to respect everybody else's time, you know, our program is over.
That's a great point. And
yeah.
It is very courteous to the audience as well as to the person who's put this together, because there are deadlines. And one thing that makes meeting planners crazed is when the agenda gets way off and then they can't plan what they're going to be doing.
Right.
They can't keep everyone else on track, because the first speaker has gone over by 20 minutes, for example.
Right. And you mentioned like speaking in Canada, and I can tell you my first presentation that I did with this national company, they said to me, no matter what, you must be finished at 12:30 for them to stay on time. So you have 11:30 to 12:30. Well, 100 people come in and they decide they're going to do a group picture. Then the 100 people have to go through the buffet line. Finally, everybody sits down at 12:05 and they tell me to start. Mm. So I spoke from 12:05 to 12:29, ended the program. The meeting planner was absolutely delighted that they were back on track.
Huh.
Just like what you said, that is so important when you're speaking, is that you, again, it's respect for the audience, respect for the meeting planner.
I think the most challenging situation I've seen is the attorney conferences in our state have what they call the 10-minute sunrise sessions. So they line up like 10 people and they give them 10 minutes each to speak. And mm-hmm. some of them are attorneys and mm-hmm. as presenters. And attorneys have great difficulty speaking for 10 minutes. It's they're off. And mm-hmm. I have watched moderators go, okay, your time is up. Your time is up. And the speaker is saying, but just a few more points. And
right.
10 minutes is 10 minutes. It's not 12 or 15 or 20.
That's disrespectful to the audience and to the other speakers and also to the meeting planner.
Tell us about the sixth deadly sin.
And the sixth one is wrath or uncontrolled anger. Now, here's the situation where you go in and they tell you, yes, we're going to have PowerPoint for you. You get there and it's not working. Now, the speaker needs to know that he or she needs to be able to do the presentation without it. But some speakers will just be very angry and say, no, you told me this was going to be there. Or you told me I'd be able to show this video clip. And, you know, they're complaining. Or they're angry with an audience member who maybe somebody's sleeping through the whole presentation, and they ask a question, and the speaker will say something like, you wouldn't have asked that if you weren't sleeping. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen people do that, but any kind of anger does not belong in a presentation. If your video clip doesn't work, you say, sorry, that didn't work, and you go on. I was at a presentation in Phoenix once where the speaker had a video clip, and it didn't work, and she just kept trying to get it to work, complaining to the people, you know, get this working. It worked when we tried it an hour ago, and then throughout the presentation, she kept referring back, well, if only you had seen the video clip. And you need, I mean, it's silly, because as an audience member, we didn't care what was in the video. We didn't see it. So go on without it. So I think it's just a matter of being, you know, ready to say, like Murphy's Law, if something goes wrong, it's going to go wrong. But you, as a speaker, still need to be ready to carry on the presentation.
You know, this one is really important as well in the courtroom when expert witnesses are testifying, because the opposing counsel is trying to get the expert witness angry by attacking credibility, by being sarcastic, because as soon as the attorney is successful in getting the expert to become angry, the expert is going to blurt out things that are not going to be favorable for the case.
Right.
So
that's an excellent example.
That getting argumentative in the courtroom can be a huge mistake. Getting argumentative with a person in the audience is also a huge mistake, because some people, and I know you've been in presentations like this, Kathleen, where someone in the audience doesn't really have a question to ask but wants to make a statement or say something
right.
to demonstrate an opinion on the subject matter. And
right.
how the presenter handles that audience member is critical, because everybody's watching that dynamic. Is the speaker
right.
going to lose her cool and become annoyed and angry, or graciously get control of the situation and continue on?
That's, you know, that's an excellent example right there. I call those people like a stage hog. they want to take over, and you're right. Everybody's watching the speaker. The speaker may be, after one question, they're raising their hand again. You need to say, let me give an opportunity for somebody else to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Or one thing I found helpful when you have somebody like that that just wants to dominate it, to say something like if you know the person's name, like Mary, in the interest of time and showing respect for other people, I'll let you and I meet afterwards, and I'll spend as long as it takes to answer all your questions. But I think we need to move on to show respect for others.
And the rest of the people are cheering when you say that.
I know. When you say that like that, in that way, to show respect for others, mm-hmm. they, you know, it turns the whole conversation.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the last one.
Now, the last one is the most important one. It's pride. And this is when the speaker believes the speaker is everything that they're saying is all about the speaker. Everything is about the speaker instead of the audience. And the speaker has to realize that it's not how smart I am as a speaker, it's how smart I can make you as the audience member. The focus has to come off of the speaker. When you take the focus off of the speaker and put it on the audience, you start, like, you analyze the audience and you think, what would help that audience? So there you're going to the idea of preparation, not being lazy. When you focus on the message, what message do I want that audience to get? You're avoiding the idea of gluttony, of more is better, because you have a compact message. When you show respect for the audience, you're not going overtime, so you're avoiding the sin of greed. When you focus on the purpose, when you say, what is my purpose with that audience? Is it to educate, motivate, call to action? Whatever it is, the key is you're focusing on the audience and not on the speaker. So that's pride. That is the, if you mm-hmm. handle that, you pretty much eliminate all the other ones.
And to tie that together with the introduction that is made about the speaker, there's some mm-hmm. real key points that help you focus on the audience, because I'm sure you've sat through introductions that go on and on and on, and by the time the introduction is over, half the audience is checking their cell phone. The worst.
Exactly right.
The worst experience that I ever had with this was an attorney who invited me to come to speak to a group of medical malpractice attorneys in his state. And I did not bring with me an introduction, which was my deadly sin. I didn't even think about doing it. He sat we're in a horseshoe-shaped table arrangement, and he was sitting next to me, and he said, I brought with me today Pat Iyer. She's a legal nurse consultant. I don't have much use for them, but I think that they can be useful on occasion. And I just wanted to kick him under the table.
That's unbelievable.
And he had hired our company to help him with preparing a pain and suffering report that ended up being a fabulous report that he absolutely loved. But he introduced me in this completely contrary way. So I found myself looking around the room, realizing that I'm looking at attorneys who already have heard he doesn't have much use for us. So I have a double challenge to get above that barrier that he created and then demonstrate my expertise. And it took about 10 minutes into my talk, and I pointed out the role of summarizing medical records and why it was important in the situations in which it could be useful. And then I started seeing all the little eyes sparkle and the facial expressions changing of, oh yeah, I get this. I understand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now my tip to anyone who is presenting to in any setting other than in the courtroom where the introduction is very scripted is to give the person who's going to introduce you the paragraph that you want them to read in like a size 14 font, double spaced.
I was just going to say 14 font. That's the key.
Make it easy mm-hmm. and say, this is how I would like you to introduce me. And then you mm-hmm. eliminate the little bomb that was dropped into the room that I got exposed
right.
to.
Yeah. And the other thing about the introduction, when you're beginning a presentation, I mentioned like you use a grabber, you want to get their attention. One of the things you need somewhere in that opening is to address the credibility of the speaker. So if they don't do it in the introduction, somehow you have to put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you may say, you know, in my 15 years as a legal nurse consultant, or, you know, you say, you put some information in there so the credibility comes out.
Perfect.
But I do what you do. I always carry an introduction in 14 font, and people that I speak with a lot, they always say to me, Kathy, you have your introduction. I just hand it to them. They know I carry it with me because it makes it easy. And then one of the reasons I do that too is because once at the National Speakers Association, I was asked to introduce a speaker, and the speaker had no introduction, and I was like scribbling things down, like right before he went up, and I thought, that person should have known better than that.
Your tips are going to be very useful to our audience, Kathleen, and I can't believe that our time is up. This has really flown by.
It has.
Thank you so much for being a part of this program. I appreciate that. And for our listeners, be sure to subscribe on iTunes, leave a review, a comment. We'd love to hear your feedback, and stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.